Hey there, friends. Welcome back to the Happiness Habits Transformation Podcast, the place to discover the happiness habits that inspiring women have used to transform their daily routines, bringing them clarity, peace, and joy. I'm your host, Michelle Reeve, former life coach and author of The Happiness Habits Transformation. In today's episode, I'm delighted to welcome Nadine Hill, body positive yoga teacher with a passion for joyful movement and cultivating everyday mindfulness. Nadine shares her personal journey of midlife reinvention, how she overcame a very negative self-image, and how yoga opened her up to both an inner and outer transformation. It was really lovely to connect with Nadine again. We've been in the same blogging circles for over 10 years. In our conversation today, you'll learn so much, including the moment that changed Nadine's life and how she followed her gut to seize that moment for her future happiness, how Nadine eventually found the self-belief she needed to thrive after a very challenging childhood, the habits that she practices daily that keep her moving forwards, her tips for winding down to sleep and removing anxiety, how celebrating the strength in our bodies can empower us no matter our shape or size, and the question that Nadine asks herself whenever she faces a new opportunity. Now, while you're listening today, think about how you can take what you learn and put it into practice. Take action in any way that's meaningful for you. And as always, you'll find the links and details of today's show and all the other shows in this series at my website, michellereeveswrites.com. But before we get to today's interview, a little personal update from me. So since the last show, I have become a self-published author. I haven't been able to talk about this publicly until now, but my original publisher that I've been working with for over 4 years and had a really great relationship with has been sold. And for many reasons, I decided to create my own imprint called Brockwall Press and go self-published. It's been a learning curve for sure, and there have been a few pulling my hair out moments. But overall, I'm really pleased with the outcome, and I'm excited that the Happiness Habits Transformation second edition is now available more widely than before. So you can now buy a paperback or ebook from Amazon globally, but also from Kobo, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, Scribd, Bol.de in Germany, Angus and Robertson in Australia, Vivlio in France, and Thalia in Italy, and you can order it from libraries too. Just ask the librarian to order it from their catalogue and make sure to say it's published by Brockwall Press because there are copies of the old version still floating out there too. Another small win for me this week was figuring out how to create A+ content for the book's Amazon page. You might have seen this when you scroll down after a book's description and there's a heading called From the Publisher, and there you might find some images that relate to the book. It really makes the book page stand out, and I'm excited that I had mine approved. It's only on the ebook page at amazon.co.uk at the moment, but I'm hoping to have it uploaded more widely soon. I know it's a small thing, but it's the small things that can really make us happy sometimes, isn't it? I also have plans to create an audiobook, write more, and perhaps even help others get their story out into the world. With self-publishing, the world really is a writer's oyster. And I have to say a huge thank you to Joanna Penn of the Creative Pen podcast for all the fab information she shares about her own self-publishing journey, which really inspired me to find out more and take the plunge myself. I highly recommend her show if you're interested in the publishing industry and in writing in general. Okay, so this was a new segment, and I'd love to know if you like hearing some behind-the-scenes details or if you'd rather just head straight into the interviews. Let me know what you think by leaving a comment where you're listening today or on the show notes page of my website or over on Instagram. Okay, back to today's show. So guys, really excited today. I have Nadine Hill with us on the show. And Nadine, we were just talking before I hit record. We've actually known each other for quite a long time.
It's been ages, hasn't it? It's been well over, like, it's coming up to 13 years, 14 years, that kind of thing. It's a long time.
It is a really long time. And both of our journeys, I guess, started in the same place, but they have
definitely moved on in all sorts of directions. And I'm really excited to have you on the show today. And I know that everyone listening is going to love your story. So I'm not going to spill all the beans. Why don't you start off? Just give us a bit of background, who you are, what you do, and then let's talk a bit about some of the challenges that you've had to overcome to get where you are today.
Okay, yeah, sure. I'm happy to talk about that. So thank you, first of all, for inviting me onto your podcast. I think the thing that made you, I guess, communicate with me, or we were on Instagram and I'd put something recently about, it was probably something yoga related because everything on my Instagram is yoga related at the moment. And I remember you saying something like, what a great story, you should come on my podcast. And this is the thing, at the moment, yes, I am working, I have been a blogger, I've worked from home for gosh 17 years, something like that, a long time. And these days I work as a yoga teacher. And that was because in January 2020, 2022, I guess, it's only just been a year. So January 2022, I got on a plane to Costa Rica. I thought, I'm getting the heck out of here. And I just wanted to get some sunshine and make some new friends. And I was at a place in my life where I was a bit lost. I was at a crossroads. What am I going to do now? Eldest child had just gone off to university. Youngest child is basically in GCSE years, you know, no longer needs me for the school run. And what's left for mum now? And so I decided I was going to go back to the workplace. I applied for some jobs and I'd get down to the final two on various job roles that were very exciting to me. I was like, yay, I'm going back to the office. And for one reason or another, these jobs did not work out. I got down to, I had second interviews, I had third interviews, and then I'd got the thanks but no thanks message from the employer. And I thought, well, why not? Why don't they want me? And I just think I was just, what do I do now? And so I turned inward and I thought, well, what do I enjoy? I enjoy yoga. I'm going to go off on a yoga retreat. I'm going to study yoga teacher training for the fun of it. And I want to be out of here because it's dark and miserable and it's British winter time and COVID was running rampant at the time. And I was worried Boris Johnson was going to close the borders and I just wanted to get the heck out. So I booked a flight. I got on a plane 10 days later. I was in Costa Rica studying yoga teacher training and I was there for a month and it was absolutely amazing. And I just think that I've shared something on my Instagram, which says it was a quote that I really liked. I don't remember who by, but it's on my Instagram if I look for it. It says something like, every life has a moment that if seized will change that life forever. And I think for me, Costa Rica was that moment. Everything I did from making the decision to get on the plane to Costa Rica right up until now, every decision I've made has all been intuitively led. I haven't thought with my head, I've thought with my heart. I've followed what my gut tells me is the right thing to do. And as a result, I actually can say I am so happy. I am so happy. I feel so grateful for life being the way it is. I have joy, plenty of joy in my day. I prioritize it. I make time for it. I make sure that things are in place that will bring me joy. And I've said to various people, friends and things who've known me for decades, and I've just said, I just feel so happy right now, so happy and so grateful. And that, I think, that passion, and it all comes from following my heart and doing what I love. And the fact that I get to share that with other people, and that gives me a real sense of purpose. So I came back from Costa Rica with my 200 hours yoga teacher training qualification. The intention was never to become a yoga teacher. The intention was to get out of England and figure it out in the sun and get a tan and make some new friends and have an adventure and just relax for a bit. That was the intention. And I did all of those things. But when I came back, I thought, well, I don't have a day job to go to, why not? Let's give this a whirl. And I started marketing. I found a local studio to rent the room and I started marketing classes. And now I've been teaching yoga for just over a year, and I've got corporate clients. I've got weekly clients who come. I do two studio classes a week. I cover for other yoga teachers when they need help, they need cover. And I've started developing that business. So as well as actual yoga, what you imagine yoga to be when you go in a yoga class, there are many limbs to yoga. Part of yoga also can involve stillness, meditation. And I've started running monthly, I call it Cozy Club. It's a yoga nidra, deep relaxation. I run those events once a month. I do seasonal workshops now. So I did something for the snow moon in February. I'm doing something for Beltane, which is May 1st. And I'm going to be running retreats as well. I'm launching my first winter retreat at the end of this year. And so I get to share yoga with so many people. 80% of the people who've been to one of my yoga classes have never done yoga before. They're beginners. And I feel so honored that I can share, I can introduce this amazing practice to them. I can help them to feel comfortable in their mind and their bodies. I can help them inhabit their bodies. I can help them stretch and move and work out emotions and work out, not that I don't do that, the working out emotions, but the space, I hold the space in that room, and they come to the mat and they take from it what they wish, what they need, which is what I did for so many years. I had a consistent yoga practice for a good 10 years before I did my yoga teacher training. And yoga really is a container that we can use, we can access it to help us work out whatever's going on in our lives, whatever we need to process. Yoga is a tool that can help us to do that.
And your story, I just find it so inspiring. The kind of, I know it's kind of a term that's thrown about now, but I mean, what a story of midlife reinvention. I'm just gonna use the term because it fits so perfectly. And I think a lot of us are getting to that stage. You know, I'm 50 I've pivoted so many times now, my head's whirling from it all. But I think it's good for us to do that and to follow our passions. And you definitely, you know, followed your passion and I guess, and from the sound of it, you know, your purpose kind of came from that place, which is where we all want our purpose to come from, you know, is from, you know, our passions and the thing that speak to us, and particularly when we want to help other people. But I know you haven't always been in a place of feeling comfortable with yourself, and I know, you know, you've done yoga for a long time, but it wasn't always necessarily something that you felt confident enough to be able to take forward. Do you want to just share a bit with us about, you know, those challenges that you had and how you kind of, how yoga maybe helped you to overcome some of them?
Sure. So I suppose it stems, so many things do from childhood, So I growing up, my parents divorced when I was about, it must be between eight and nine, something like that. Situation growing up was my parents both loved me and my brother. I don't doubt that. But both of my parents had brain injuries. And one in particular, my dad, his was very severe. He had a motorbike accident when he was a young man. And he had to learn how to walk and talk again. He had damage to his prefrontal cortex. That's the side of the brain that deals with your emotional and your behavioral functioning. And he was unable to regulate his emotions. So growing up in that household, you grew up walking on eggshells because you don't know what's going to set. You don't know what's going to set dad off. And we need to keep that boat calm, because if it's not calm, it's shouting and screaming and all of this. And it's a tough environment to grow up in. As the eldest child in that environment, I took on, I guess, the role of the peacemaker. You know, obviously nobody asked, nobody said, Nadine, would you take on that? No, you just do what you need to do, don't you, to survive, to get through, to protect your younger brother from having to hear shouting and screaming and things smashing and things like that. It's not a nice environment. And so growing up in that kind of environment, you learn to be a chameleon, and you learn to make yourself invisible when that's necessary, and you learn how to smooth things over when that's necessary. And so you become adept at sensing a mood and to shape shifting yourself in such a way to limit the damage. And I suppose when you do that, when that is your the way that you operate for the most of the time, that becomes the way you are. And so I see now as an adult, I abandoned myself as a child. I abandoned myself to keep that boat stable, because if that boat wasn't stable, we'd all fall out and drown. So when I say I abandoned myself, it's things like not learning good boundaries, emotional eating. That was my weapon of choice, was food. I used to turn to food to give me the hug and the comfort that I was craving. I would turn to food for many reasons, boredom, for lots of reasons. But I believe I had a dysfunctional relationship with food, and it was all stemmed from the fact that I couldn't count on daily life being predictable and normal, I guess. And so you shapeshift into different areas, and that's what I did. And so obviously the byproduct of having a dysfunctional relationship with food, especially when it's overeating, as it was in my case, is you put on weight and you get fat. And then as a schoolgirl, that can be hell on earth then as well, because you're the fat one. You're the one that they all pick on. I remember at school, I know this wasn't in the show notes I sent you when you were asking my background, but at school, I remember, do you remember Blue Peter, the TV program for kids, used to always run appeals for various things. And somebody at my school said, oh, Nadine's doing the Blue Peter belly appeal. Oh my God, I'll never forget that. The Blue Peter belly appeal. And then there was another one who said, if Nadine was sunbathing on the beach, Greenpeace would think she was a whale and push her back in.
No.
Now, I have to admire the creativity on that one, actually. That is quite funny. But it's not funny being at the heart of it, let's say. It's not funny when it's about you. And so all of that emotional eating and all of this, I suppose, yeah, you grow up not feeling... I don't want to say confident in yourself, because I suppose this is different. Despite everything I've just said, I always have had confidence. I've always been the kind of person who at a dance floor, at a party, I'd be the first on the dance floor. I was life and soul. I always was life and soul, always had lots of friends, was fairly popular. I mean, not at high school I was, and I was bullied a bit at high school. I wasn't popular there, but at middle school, I was quite popular. So all of that shining and all of that, which is great, but what I have now as a grown woman is inner confidence. I feel solid, let's put it that way. I feel solid. I have got solid concrete under my feet. I'm grounded. I spent so much of my life not being grounded. I felt like my foundations from early years were built on sand, not on concrete. You never knew when the rug was going to get pulled out from under you. And that kind of instability is I guess you learn to roll with it, but it's not great. Let's put it that way. It's not great. Whereas when an adult, I am sure of myself and who I am and the people around me, and I have good relationships, and I honour and look after each one of those relationships, because I'm so very grateful. Like, for example, my husband, he's my soulmate. He's my absolute rock. We've been together for more than 30 years. I'm so grateful for him, because I know what the opposite is. And so I make sure to love him, and I let him know he's loved and appreciated. And as a result, he treats me that way too. So, we have a great marriage, and we've got two great kids and a really stable, loving home. And that's the thing that that's golden, isn't it? When you haven't had that. So did that answer your question? That went on a bit of a rampage.
No, it did.
I don't know, but I'm sure there's something I've missed. I've forgotten to address, if you want to give me a prompt.
No, it absolutely did. And I think what I find so interesting about your story, and you haven't mentioned whether you had any therapy or what you went through, but the fact that as an adult now you have that sort of inner confidence, and I guess it's that difference between being outgoing and having the inner sort of self-confidence, as you've said, you know, a lot of people are very outgoing and you know, great at parties, etc., but you know, and good when they're in company, but maybe, you know, when they're on their own at home, it's a different story. What I'm really fascinated is about, and I'd love to ask you this, is how did you actually go about finding that inner self-belief? What was the process that you went through?
Okay, well, yes, so to answer your question, I haven't had any formal therapy as such. Well, I tell a lie, I have had. Back in the day when we were young, when my brother and I were both school children, we had to go to like family, there was a family therapy thing, which was a load of rubbish. I mean, I'm sure it, I think it was a box ticking exercise at the time. And obviously we were very closed up and not willing to engage with the process because we didn't understand the process. So putting that aside, in terms of being an adult, everything I've done has been self-led, I guess. I've done extensive reading. I mean, I've read loads of self-help books. I've done loads of journaling. I've looked into everything. But the one thing that really did help me was yoga, and still is yoga. But not only yoga, but just movement, just physical movement, getting up and moving your body. Because I guess I used to live a lot of my life from the neck up. I was always in my head because obviously I was overeating and I was stuffing down my emotions by eating food. My body and my brain were detached from each other, I suppose. I was literally living in my head and not paying any attention to what was going on in my body. And I think that starting to bring that round, I guess you're saying, what did I do? I think I got to a stage in life. I got to a stage where I felt happy and secure in my marriage, my home with my children. I feel like I really started to heal after I had my son. I have an elder daughter and a son, and there's 4.5 years between the two of them. And my daughter, absolutely, she made me a mother. I'm so grateful to her for making me a mother. She was we figured it out together. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but we figured it out together, and she's an amazing young woman, and I'm so grateful to be her mom. She made me a mother, and that was such a hard journey. And then I had my son, and I feel like he completed me. I feel like having him, I sing to him, "You are my sunshine." You know that song, "My Only Sunshine"? "You make me happy." He goes, "Oh, shut up." He doesn't want to hear it. But I suppose for me, having that, having him and having my daughter, two children, husband, house, stability, what's normal, I'd finally achieved what I didn't have as a kid. And that was the start of my healing, I guess. And so because I felt in that, I felt safe enough to start to go there into old emotions. I knew I was unhappy with some things. And so the best way for me to figure things out was I just used to read a lot. I used to buy books from Amazon and on the internet and all sorts, and just read about various self-help books from authors. There are hundreds of them, millions of them on Amazon. And I just read my way through all of them and then took things on board and processed it and allowed myself to cry for things that needed to be cried for. I do believe that in order to heal emotions, you have to feel it to heal it. And I'd buried so much deep within, not wanting to deal with it because it wasn't safe to do so. But then I'd finally reached a stage in my life where I am in control. I am in control of this household. I am in control of this family, my situation. And so I suppose I'd reached a stage where nothing external could shake my boat now. And so I decided, and it wasn't a decision really. I say I decided to unpack everything and process things. It wasn't actually a decision. It was more a natural evolvement. It was a curiosity. I wanted to process things. And I also do think you do reach a certain age in life where, regardless of what your background has been, I think we all when we have children, look at the parenting that we had and question that. And we either say, yeah, that was great, I'm going to do just what they did. Or we say, I'm never going to treat my children like that or whatever. And we make decisions for ourselves. And I just think naturally, as you get older, you do reflect and you do make those decisions. And so that was me. It wasn't therapy as such. It was just a lot of years of unprocessing and unpacking and talking to my husband and my friends and things like that, and just doing it all myself. But yoga and certainly movement have been, I'd say, fundamental in helping me to become who I am now, I guess. The person I am now, I feel, is the person that was always there. She just wasn't allowed to shine before because it wasn't safe to, you know. Whereas now, I can do anything I want. I can do anything I want. And I feel that, that there's no limits. I don't feel encumbered, or I used to feel like a bit of a bird in a cage before, you know. I had wings that I wanted to spread but I couldn't because I was in this cage. I was trapped. And now I can. And actually, now I've said that, you did just remind me, I did seek out some counselling. And this would have been before I had my children. It's just reminded me because I think I said those words, I was a bird in a cage, to this lady, a therapist. I had one session and I remember sat in front of her and I was saying that I'm a bird in a cage. And she said something like, what I'm noticing is you're telling me your story, but you're still smiling, like I'm smiling, because that's the people pleasing part of me. I wanted her to like me. I wanted her to relate to me so that she'd help me. And so to kind of win her over, I guess, I was smiling and being pleasant and nice, because that's what nice girls do. They smile and please everyone else. Instead of getting angry and saying this is crap, or whatever, and getting upset and processing, I would still push down my real emotions and paint on a smile. And I just remembered that I'd completely forgotten about that. I had that one session and I don't know what came of it, but anyway, there we are.
Well, it obviously did have some kind of impact on you, even if you didn't realize it at the time, which is really interesting. But just to go back to what you were saying, you know, I love the fact that you took it on yourself to process those emotions, and effectively, you know, you went on a personal development journey. It resonates so much with me because I did very similarly when I had postnatal depression after my first child and had to go through, I did have therapy for a while, but then, like I always say, it doesn't completely sort of fix you, as it were. You know, it just got me from non-functioning to functioning, and then you have to go on your own developmental journey to get to wherever you're trying to get to. But I love that, you know, that it really will resonate with so many people, I think, because so many women, quite particularly, you know, people pleasing is something that's very, very common, and we don't put ourselves first. And if we have a family or we have children, you know, obviously we do put them first, but I think we never stop our growth potential. You know, our growth potential is always there, and we always have that ability to reflect and to set ourselves new goals for who we are now and who we want to become. And you really went on that journey, which is so inspiring. And I'm sure lots of people will be listening to this and thinking, gosh, you know, I'd like to do that. I'd like to take my own personal development journey, and I'd like to go and do some of that. Are there any, so did you, when you were doing that, were there any sort of particular habits that you started? Was there anything particular that you did on a regular basis that kind of got you into that space of changing your life and deciding what you wanted?
Yeah, I guess, I've seen this quote. I don't know who to attribute it to, but I've seen it online. And it says something like, the best doctors are sunshine, sleep, regular food, movement, this kind of thing. So in terms of habits and patterns, to me, the fundamentals are get sleep well, eat regularly, move every day, and get some fresh air and outside. And it sounds so basic, doesn't it? But it really is. I think when you're depressed, when you haven't got the will to get out of bed and function. Everything is such an effort and you feel so heavy in your body and mind. That can be a huge feat to put on some clothes and some shoes and get out into the world and walk around the block. It could sound insurmountable. But having been in a place where that was my reality, and I took antidepressants to help that. And they, like you just said about your therapy, they didn't cure the problem, but they removed the black cloud that was over my head long enough that I felt now I'm on a level playing field with everybody else, instead of having this black cloud above me where nobody else does, because this is what I was thinking in my mind, you know, it's just me, I'm the only one. I felt that the black cloud was removed and I got onto the level playing field, same as everyone else. So now I can cope with whatever, and you have to process it and work through. But once, from the other side, once I did start to do these small things, getting out walking, making sure I slept well, making sure I ate regularly, that then becomes a positive cycle, a positive spiral, and it keeps you going. And I think for me, I always, I ask myself, how does it feel? That's what the question I ask myself for everything now. You know, if somebody asks something of me, do you want to do this or shall we go here or whatever, I do a little gut check and I think, well, how do I feel about that? My husband actually said to me this morning, it's Friday today as we're recording this, and he said, what are your plans this weekend? Saturday's usually the one day that I don't do any exercise as such. I like to, nowadays I do exercise 6 times a week just because I like to keep that dopamine high going. I don't leave it too long to let it drop down. I like to keep it up there on nice high vibe. So movement daily for me, I have one day a week where I don't do anything because I do need to rest. And Saturday for me is that day. And he said to me, what are your plans for this weekend? I fancy a drive out to the coast. And I just laughed and I went, I'm happy for you to go to the coast, but I don't want to. I knew immediately, gut check. I mean, in the past, I might have gone along with it just because that's what he wanted to do and to keep him happy. Not because I have to, but because that was the conditioning, people pleasing. But now I'm just like, nope, you get yourself off to the coast, go and enjoy your fish and chips, and I'm going to have a luxurious day at home because that's what my gut tells me that I need to do. So it's the habits are those fundamentals of moving regularly and eating well and sleeping. And it's one of those things, this whole sleep thing is an easy thing to say, but if you do suffer from broken sleep or you find it hard to shut down and relax, it can be one of those, well, it's easy for you to say, get plenty of sleep. It's hard, easier said than done, which I agree with you, it is. Hence yoga, which is yoga for me, helps me to regulate my emotions, and it will have this effect on others too, because it enables you to slow down your mind to the speed of your body. So for example, in my yoga classes, one of the things that I teach is when we're getting settled, we always have a little bit of grounding before the class starts, so we don't go straight into movement. It's either sat upright or we might be laid on the mat. I cue them to close their eyes, take in a deep breath and observe the breath right down from the bottom up to the top of the chest, allowing it to exhale effortlessly. And then I get them to observe this, and the slowing, effectively the effect it has is slowing down their mind to the speed of the breath. And I say to them, for the next 60 minutes, there's nowhere that you need to be, but right here, this is your time, this is your space. And it helps them to release the to-dos and the I must do this and I must do that, that we all have going on in our heads. And it allows them to focus on the moment that we're in, the very split second that we're in while we're in it. And that it's 1 hour. It's a 1 hour class once a week that they come to. 1 hour out of a 168-hour week isn't much to ask for yourself, is it? But the benefits that it has, not only in terms of the physical movement, building strength in your core, building focus and flexibility and balance, but the effect that it has on your mind, on just slowing down. So you're taking your You're activating your parasympathetic nervous system. A lot of us daily life, we live in fight or flight. That's your sympathetic nervous system is activated, and it's like your muscles are clenched because you're braced, ready for the next fight. You know, back going back to caveman times, obviously we have these functions in our body, because if we were going to meet a woolly baboon, or what they call woolly mammoth in caveman times, if you were greeted with something, you'd need the blood in your body, in your legs, to run. And I think modern life, with its many stresses and anxieties and many complications, it keeps us in that state so much, and we don't unclench, we don't release, we our muscles are tight and our shoulders are up by our ears, and we breathe shallow, we don't breathe deep, and all of this stuff contributes to keeping you in fight or flight mode. Whereas when you tune into the rhythm of your actual breath and try to elongate the breath, and things like stretching and reaching up into every inch of space within your body, inhabiting your whole body as you stretch from the core, it really helps you to slow down and be in your body and be in your mind and keep things calm. And it brings about those feel-good hormones, and that it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest response. And we need that equally as much as we need the fight or flight. Both are valid and both are real, but a lot of people spend so much time in one rather than the other.
Oh, wow. So much there that I love, and that I know, you know, for anybody listening who is going through, you know, perimenopause or already in menopause, you know, those of us who are at that stage, sleep can be one of those things that definitely eludes us.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I've spoken to women, you know, that who say that their body just doesn't feel their own anymore, all kinds of stuff. So many symptoms, you know, that come around at this time, you know, restless legs and tinnitus and aches and pains and all of these things can really cause problems with our sleep, and you know, having a racing mind and anxiety that comes up from nowhere. And I love what you said then about, you know, that kind of whole thing of our shoulders up by our ears and shallow breathing. You know, it is very much how a lot of us, you know, busy during the day, running businesses, looking after kids, looking after elderly parents, you know, whatever it is, our lives are stressful. Yeah. And then you add things like COVID on top of that, or like we have now, you know, the economic problems that we've got, and it's no wonder people are stressed out. But I love that you have that little space and grace in your day, and that you're sharing that with other people. Are there any tips that you could give people listening who maybe don't have a yoga practice at the moment, but maybe some tips that could help them to just wind down for sleep?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the thing is as well, I think with yoga, people who don't have it, people who are in fight or flight and whose mind is racing. And one of the things that they may say, and it's something I was guilty of saying myself, certainly in my 20s, I don't have time to go to yoga. I don't have time. I haven't got an hour in the day. I'm so busy, busy, busy. I don't have time for yoga. And now I look back and I realize, yeah, yoga gives you more time. It helps create time, because the value of a second when I'm in holding the space in Shavasana, I let them have obviously this rest in Shavasana at the end of class, and it's this corpse pose, it's the moment of stillness before they go back out into the world, and it's their chance to just be. And I tend to, from the last 10 minutes of class is when I'm starting to get them and cue them into Shavasana, and then they certainly have several minutes of time where I've stopped talking and things are quiet and they can just relax and be in their own minds and let go before I bring them back into the reality. You know, we finish class and we say namaste and everybody goes on the merry way. But even knowing that, just observing, because I'm not in Shavasana, I'm holding that for them, so I'm observing the clock and making sure that I finish the class on time. So even just a minute though doesn't sound very long, but it's quite long when you start watching a clock move. So in terms of talking about yoga and a yoga practice may seem quite intimidating to some people, just because of, they might think, well, I can't get into those postures and I'm not flexible enough to do that. And, you know, one of the things that I would say is yoga's for everybody. It is literally for everybody. Everybody and everybody, if you understand that distinction I was making. So the word everybody and everybody. You can do yoga if you're in a chair. You don't have to be on your feet or get on the floor to do yoga. And you can do it no matter what your size. And it's yoga is about more than the postures. It's more than just asana. It's the breath work and the mindfulness as well. It's the union of mind and body. So to answer your question about winding down on an evening and getting yourself into a state where you might have a better rest, one of the things that I would say is to take time to breathe. And that sounds really weird, because obviously if we didn't breathe, we wouldn't be here. Without our breath, we wouldn't be alive. But so few of us do conscious breath. We don't think about our breath. We just take it for granted. It's always there breathing in the background. But one of the things that I do say to people in my classes as well is you always have your breath. It's always with you. You can never just forget it and leave it at home. You've always got your breath within your body. That is a tool that you carry around with you all day. So if ever you're in a situation where you're feeling anxious, maybe a panic attack rising or something going on that's making your fingers curl because you're starting to get angry or you're starting to feel triggered or your emotions are raised by something, if you feel that response within your body, one thing that you can do is to consciously remind yourself to breathe, to take a nice deep inhale, to breathe and exhale. You can slow down your breath. And I use that tool it's very rare that I get stressed out these days, I must admit. I'm still human. You know, we all have our stressful moments. But I tend to let a lot wash over. You know, if somebody in the car cuts you up, or I don't get, but once upon a time, I would have put my hand on the horn and gone, peep, you know. These days, I don't, whatever. If they're in a rush, they're in a rush. That's cool. They're not going to affect my mood and my, I refuse to let them affect my mood. So I just, if I do find myself getting annoyed or feeling I don't want to be a victim of my emotions, so I consciously choose to breathe and I follow my breath up from the bottom to the top, and then I let it exhale, and I just do that a few times, and it does bring things down calm. It helps you know, you might have your blood pressure, your heartbeat throbbing in your ears, and it helps to bring it down. So much of what we process emotionally comes out of us in physical ways. You know, like I mentioned, the shoulders up by your ears, you know, that there's some people who that is their natural state. Their body has overcompensated, or it's got stuck in a certain pattern from so much repeated behavior. So it's not conscious. And so what we can do by just slowing down with our breath and trying to move as well, is to try and right some of those things that have might be plaguing us, you know, the tight shoulders, that kind of thing. So breathing, and I would say a stretch if you can, you know, stand on your feet are hip width apart, and just reach your arms up to the sky and then hinge from the hips and allow your upper body to hang. Let your head, upper body hang on the floor, and it really elongates your spine, and it really helps to feel a bit calmer, I guess. I think being upside down, I find it quite calming. I don't know about anyone else.
That's so funny you say that. I love, absolutely love forward fold.
I do.
I would be a forward fold half the day if I could.
It's absolutely so calming, just love that hanging. It?
Yeah, I really love it. And I think, I don't know, it does something to just reversing the blood flow. I just think it does something to you.
It does. And it's very youthful as well. You know, these inversions, downward dog and forward fold, they do send blood to your head, to your face. You know, gravity has its effect. We're stood upright all day, and the blood flow is naturally going to be going toward the bottom half of our body. I mean, obviously we've got our systems inside that keep the blood pumping around the body, but really spending some time kind of upside down is quite good for you, I think. I mean, not for everybody.
No, we always have to be mindful, but
yeah, you have to be mindful, but it does you good, and it keeps you, you know, keeps the skin plump and all of that.
Talk to me a bit about strength, Nadine, because I've been following your Instagram page for a while now, and one of the things that I love the most is how much you celebrate the strength in your body. Yes. And this speaks to me, again, as someone with very low bone density, and I'm desperately trying to sort that out with my own weight training program. But I love how you celebrate the strength of your body. Talk to us a bit about what that strength means to you.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that, because I guess I do celebrate the strength in my body. I suppose for me, because as somebody who has been an overweight woman for most of my life, well, all my adult life, because I started putting on weight when I was a kid, I guess coming up to preteen. I was a preteen, and then whole time being a teenager, I was overweight. And then as an adult, yeah, because I'd had these habits, these patterns that weren't serving me. I recognize that now. At the time, they actually did serve me, though. The weight I put on was the kind of soft duvet that I wrapped around myself to feel safe and comfortable. I mean, the excess weight isn't comfortable by any means, but at that time, it was what I needed to make me feel that way, I guess. But as an adult, I don't need that anymore. I don't need the armor anymore. I don't need the protection. I'm good in who I am and myself. And I feel strong enough in my body and in my mind to honor my own boundaries. So I won't be walked over. I won't be belittled. I won't be have my feelings trampled on, because if anyone tries, then I'm, to be honest, they don't try because they know they're not going to get a response. I think, you know, sometimes people who are not very nice prey on weakness, and they spot weakness and they prey on it because they know they're not going to get any pushback. If people recognize they might get pushback from this person, they don't try. So celebrating strength in my body, because I'd spent so much time being overweight and not having physical strength, I would say, I couldn't do a push-up. I couldn't do any of that. I couldn't, like, forward fold, we were just saying. You know, it would have hurt me for a long time to bend in that way. But as I've moved and as I've started to gain fitness in my body, I really appreciate that I am stronger in my body now. So especially in yoga, there's a pose called Chaturanga Dandasana, which is like a low push-up. So if you imagine your body in a plank, most people know what a plank looks like. You're on the tips of your toes and the palms of your hands. Now, holding a plank is pretty tough. And anyway, it's quite a tough move. Chaturanga Dandasana is you're in a high plank and then you bend at the elbows and you lower your body down to the mat in a straight line. So it's like a low push-up. It is really super hard. And I've noticed, because I'm doing yoga so much and I've been doing it for so long now, I've definitely witnessed my own progression from not being able to hold a plank, having to hold a plank with my knees down because that was all I could manage because I had no upper body strength. And now I can do it and I can hold a Chaturanga and I can hold it for, you know, quite a few seconds before I have to release down to the floor. It's the strength is there, and I celebrate that because it makes me feel more powerful. When I've got strength in my body, I guess it goes back to those caveman days, doesn't it? Survival of the fittest. If I've got strength in my body, then I have the power, if I need to run away or to do this, that, and the other. So it's empowering. I find it empowering. Not to say that if you don't have a strong body, you can't be empowered. That's not what I mean at all. But I just, for me as well, I just find that feeling strong in my body, being able to lift a heavy weight or to do a Chaturanga and hold it, I find very empowering, because I feel like I can do this. Yes, I can do this. And it's like, the more things that you can do, the better you feel about yourself, don't you? The more things that you can do in life, whatever it is, balancing a household budget, raising children, whatever it might be, you might be able to bake the perfect cake, you know, whatever it is that you can do, when you can do something well, you feel proud of yourself because you've done it. Not everyone can do that, and you've done it, and so it makes you feel good. One thing I would just, I don't know if I've mentioned this in the pre-show interview, but I failed my driving test 7 times. No, I passed it on the 7th time. So one might deduce from this that I'm not very good at driving. I actually am. I haven't had an accident. And I've been driving, 25 years or more now. But one thing that I'm proud of now, looking back at the time when I failed my test and I failed my test and I failed it again and I failed it again, I look back and I can see why I failed, because I wasn't grounded at the time. Like I mentioned to you, my foundation was on sand. It wasn't on concrete. I wasn't grounded. I don't think I was safe to be behind a wheel. And this is why I failed my test. When I stopped taking the test and I had some time, I just thought, this isn't for me for right now, blah, blah, blah. And when I went back to it and I was a bit more mature, a bit older and calmer in my body, and I did go take my test and I passed my test. And so I passed on my 7th driving test. And so, like I say, you might think, well, you're not good at driving. But the thing is, I look back on that period now and I think, I don't give up. I don't give up. It might have taken me 7 times, but I got there in the end. With this weight, I might have been overweight my whole adult life. I'm 48 years old now. To get to where I am right now, as I sit here today talking to you, I think I've probably lost 3 stone, about 3 stone to get to here. I'm not fully done yet. There's still more that I want to do. I'm not in a massive hurry. I mean, you know, it'll come off as it comes off. But my weight loss, it doesn't come from a place of, oh, I'm so down on myself, I look so bad and I need to move away from where I am right now. My weight loss is a moving toward a fitter body, moving toward a slimmer frame that I can fit into the nice clothes that I see that I want to wear. So I'm not moving away. I don't not like where I am now. I celebrate where I am now, because where I am now, 3 stone ago, I would have died to be where I am now. So I appreciate where I am now, because it took hard work to get here. But wherever any of us are, the version of you 5 years ago that looks at the version of you now, wouldn't you think, wow, look what she achieved. Look what she did. She was determined. She had grit. She had resilience. She never gave up. She excelled at this. Whatever it is, we can always find something within our lives to celebrate. So even though my 6 failed driving tests might not actually seem like a very good thing, I view it as a good thing, because you know what? I didn't give up.
I love that. And you know how I feel about daily celebration. Everyone that's listening, I'm always going on about finding 3 things you can celebrate every day, even if it is just the fact that you made 5 minutes time for yourself to, as you say, to breathe, or to have a hot cup of coffee and drink it all the way down to the bottom, or to read a couple of pages from a book that you really want to read, but you don't make time for. Whatever it is, there's always something to celebrate. And I think that's such a strong and powerful message. And also, just on that strength piece, I think it's really important as well to, as you know, women in our, I say midlife, I suppose 50 is, it's 50 midlife now, I like to think,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
I like to hope it is. You know, there is just practically, the stronger we can be in our bodies and the stronger our bones are, the more it will benefit us as we age. And the more I learn about the importance of bone strength, I mean, obviously from my own journey, but also older relatives, and how falling as we're older becomes the trigger for so many other problems health-wise, and can land us in hospital where all sorts of other things can affect us. I think strength is so important in midlife women. And that doesn't mean that you have to go necessarily and join a gym and start weight training like I do, but any kind of weight bearing activity that you can do that helps to strengthen your body will strengthen your bones, it will strengthen your body, and as you say, just that satisfaction of having done it will strengthen your mind.
Absolutely. And even like you mentioned, people think of strengthening and joining a gym and doing weights, and weight training to a lot of people is quite intimidating too. You can actually build a great deal of strength in yoga, because yes, you're using your body weight. Like, for example, going back to the planks, you're holding your own body weight up, and you can build strength that way. And the people who've come to my classes, like I say, majority of them have been beginners, and they'll say to me, oh, I can definitely feel a difference. I hear this all the time. I can definitely feel a difference. They can reach further, or they feel stronger, and or they ache less. And I love that. I love that. So them coming, I'm happy that they discovered yoga and that they came to me. And I'm happy that I've been able to directly impact their health and their and health is wealth, isn't it? I mean, you know, we sacrifice growth when we're younger. We think that having lots of money and being successful in business and a fancy job title and all of these things, we think of these as markers of success. And of course they are, but you know, really what's true success? Being able to put your socks on without falling over, you know, as you get to midlife as well. That's harder than it sounds, isn't it? To balance and put your sock on. I make a point of that. I balance
100%.
And put my sock 100%. On. I don't because if you don't, we hear this all the time. If you don't use it, you lose it. And we hear that so much. And so we just got to keep using it because otherwise we lose it. And I don't want to lose it.
No, I think that's so true. I think I'm going to get this wrong, but I think it was Julia Bradbury who has been on her own health journey. I think it was Julia Bradbury that started a whole thing about being able to stand up and lift your leg up and put a sock on and balance without having to sit down. I think it was. You have to check it out, everyone, on her Instagram page, Julia Bradbury. I think it was her. But I remember I watched that and I thought, I can do that. I'm sure I can do that. And it wasn't as easy as I thought.
Harder than it sounds, isn't it?
It is harder than it sounds. And you take for granted that you can still do the things at 50 that you could do when you were 20. And that is not always the case, but you can build back up to it. I think that's the thing. It's, I think almost, you know, us midlife women, we need to be a bit more conscious about how we move our bodies and how we want to be able to move our bodies over the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Absolutely. And it's like the thing you've just said about you think, oh, I can do that. You do, because our brains don't age. I mean, of course they do age, but us inside our brains, inside our spirits are willing. You know, as you get older, it's just the flesh that becomes weak, isn't it? The spirit is willing. You think, I can do this. And we all feel still young in our heads. And I mean, I'm 48 now, so I'm 2 years away from being 50. It doesn't freak me out. I celebrate. I think it's great. But I just, back in the day, a long time ago, I might have thought 50? That's really old. But I don't feel really old. I'm just getting started.
100%. Amen to that. I always think my ego is 25. My body's 50, but my ego is still 25. You mentioned the books. You mentioned that you read lots of books when you were kind of doing your sort of not formal therapy, but kind of working through your own personal development and yes. self-help process. Are there any books that you particularly would recommend? Any books that really spoke to you and stayed with you and you think it'll be beneficial for other people to read?
I mean, there's been lots of, but one book is not going to do it. That's just one person's opinion. But for me, this particular book, I don't remember what it was called. It was by this doctor guy. I will look it up and I will let you know. But in this book, I think it was transformative for me. It was about your brain and it was about how your brain and processes things. But one of the things in the book that they said was, and I take this on board, we all have a little voice in our head. We all have a voice saying this, that, you know, running a commentary of everything we're doing and everything we're thinking and we're feeling throughout our day. And I guess I've trained mine recently. I've trained mine to be positive and happy. But some of us, and I used to certainly have this, the voice was negative and you know, you can't do this. And I think that's our ego and it's our fear, because its job is to protect us. Its job is to look out for us. And it does a great job most of the time, but it overcompensates, I think. And it keeps us too small and it keeps us reined in too much out of fear for its own survival. Just because the voice in your head says it doesn't make it true. And that was a game changer for me. And I just thought, yeah, what is this voice? What is it? God? Is it, you know, the universe? What is it? It's just a voice in my head. Nobody else can hear it, only me. Just because it's saying something, it doesn't make it true. So we can choose to reevaluate or to accept and take on board what it says, or we can choose to say, well, you've got your opinion, but I'm going to do something different. We don't have to just go along with it just because it's inside our heads. And that book was kind of a, I suppose I've developed it since this. It might not be exactly this. This is my interpretation. But that one was quite interesting. And then lots of books as well on manifestation I've found have been really good, because they are very much along the lines of think, you know, I guess training your thoughts to achieve a positive outcome. And I think manifestation can be quite misunderstood in society. I think after The Secret and everything, you know, that big, was it Rhonda Byrne book, The Secret? And people are like, oh, if you sit and you sit cross-legged and you say to yourself, I want a Ferrari, and you just keep wishing for this Ferrari, it'll turn up. And I don't think that's the point, actually. I think it's more about training your thought and then doing inspired action. So you're putting out the thought out there, you're deciding on what you want out of the world, and then you are taking inspired action to make it happen. So if I was sat on my butt thinking, I want to be a yoga teacher, but I was sat on my butt just wishing it, it's not going to happen, is it? The only way you can be a yoga teacher is by going out and doing. You actually have to get up and do, not just think about it. So it's the thought plus the action makes it happen. And I think a lot of manifestation books are quite good for that kind of brain training element, I find. So, yeah.
I think that's Abraham. So true. Yeah. I think that's really, really true. And the mind is a very, very powerful thing. And as you say, it doesn't always serve us, because it is trying to protect us. And once we recognize that, it's much easier to be able to break out of the fear mode. And as you say, kind of let your inner voice go sit in the corner and read Vogue while you get on with hitting your goals and your dreams.
Exactly.
You definitely, you know, you epitomize that with everything that you've done and your journey. And I think it's so inspiring, and you speak about it so plainly, and I think I just know it's going to resonate with so many people listening today. And on that topic, Nadine, how can people find and connect with you? Because I'm sure so many people are going to want to be able to you know, see where you are on social media and also find out a bit more about your yoga.
Well, so my name is Nadine Hill, NadineHill. And so on all social media, on every platform, from TikTok to Facebook to YouTube to Instagram, it's symbol for @ I am Nadine Hill. My website is nadinehill.co.uk. So it's pretty easy once you've got the correct spelling to find me. I love to have people connect and follow along and see and strike up a conversation. I love social media, I love connecting. But before we end, I just want to say, like you just mentioned then about, you know, having that voice inside, go and sit and read Vogue while you get on with the task at hand. I tend to think of it in a slightly different way, but I heard someone else say this and it resonated. I think it's about putting it in the passenger seat, isn't it? Instead of in the driver's seat, I'm in the driver's seat. That voice can go in that, you know, they can come along. I'm not trying to leave you behind. You can come along, but you're not going to run the show. I'm running the show. And I think it's getting over fear, isn't it? Before Christmas, I went live on Instagram Live for a full week because I wanted to get over the fear of going live on Instagram, because it's scary. You want to press record on Instagram and it's scary. What if I fluff up? What if I forget what I'm going to say? What if, you know, I don't know, what if nobody tunes in? There's so many fears that you could have, and it's so much easier to pre-record something and then watch it and make sure you're all looking good and sounding good and then put it out than it is to go live. Live is scary, but I didn't want to be scared of it. So I made a point of scheduling a week of, I did a 10 minute yoga stretch every day for a week, and this was at the start of December, and it's on my Instagram feed. And I did it live, and I did it for the reason of I want to get over the fear. And so I use Instagram like free therapy. It is free therapy. You don't have to pay for it. You just challenge yourself. I put things out there and then I do it. If I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And I do it. And I think that's how you build confidence. If you make a promise to yourself, you're going to do something, Don't back down from that promise. If you've promised you're going to do something, then do it, because otherwise you're just telling yourself that you're not someone you can count on, and we need to be able to count on ourselves. And so that's how you build confidence. The word confidence, I think, comes from the Latin. I don't know the exact, but it's to trust oneself. The Latin definition is to trust oneself, and that's how you build confidence, by trusting yourself. And the way you trust yourself is you follow through on the commitments you make to yourself. So that was just something.
Amen. Amen to that, that we need to trust ourselves more. Nadine, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. As I say, I could talk for hours, and I know lots of people will be heading over to your Instagram feed now to watch you trusting yourself and going live. I know I will. But yeah,
I think the first one I might have fluffed up or whatever, but it's what it is. I just thought, do you know what? I'm not robbing a bank. I'm not doing anything horrible. I'm a good person. I'm trying it out. And even though my heart's beating in my face right now, I'm just going to bite the bullet and do it. And I did so. And it removed the fear. So it worked.
No, good for you. More of that. I think we all need to feel the fear and do it anyway, Susan Jeffers said. But thanks again so much for being on today. It's been an absolute pleasure, Nadine.
Oh, thank you ever so much for having me. I really appreciate that, Michelle. Lovely to talk to you.
Okay, that's it for today's show. And as I mentioned earlier, you'll find all the links for this episode and previous episodes in this series in the show notes at michellereeveswrites.com/podcast. And hey, if you did enjoy this episode, it would mean the world to me if you could take 5 minutes and leave a comment and review where you're listening today. I love to hear from you. It makes this more of a conversation. And due to the way these platforms work, it really does mean that others will more easily find the show. Thanks so much for listening today. I'll see you next time. Bye for now.